Well, some government-funded arts organisations are feeling rather nervous. This follows the Arts Minister, George Brandis, sending a letter to Rupert Meyer, who is the chairman of the Australia Council. Brandis has instructed the Australia Council to develop a policy to deal with any Australia Council-funded artist or organisation that refuses funding offered by corporate sponsors or terminates a current funding agreement. And you can read that letter. It's on our website. It's a very powerful document, actually. Now, this follows a successful campaign by artists associated with this year's Biennale of Sydney to pressure the board of the Biennale to relinquish its sponsorship agreement with Transfield Holdings, a company which has a financial stake in running offshore detention centres. And it's a fight which the artists have won, a victory which the government does not like. So what does this political intervention signal? What's at stake here? To discuss the issues, Professor Peter Treguier joins us. He's the head of the School of Music at the ANU. We did ask the Australia Council to come along, but they declined. Peter, welcome to the show.
I'm very pleased to be here.
So the federal government, and many commentators indeed, think it's unreasonable for artists to reject arts funding on the grounds that they object to how that money was earned. What do you make of that thinking?
Problematic. I think because it's essentially going to restrict the ability of artists to engage in political commentary or as it were, to use their art or indeed their actions around their artworks to criticise current government actions. And I think...
Hang on. How does it do that? It's not... No one's saying the artists can't make work they want to make. What they're saying is there are problems if they reject a certain source of funding. I mean, the logic is I'll take money from this or that company and then I'll make work which might criticise that company.
Because I think ultimately if you're putting strings attached to, if it were, the funding basis for artists, then ultimately that's going to potentially restrict the sphere activities. I think that's the problem here. Of course, it's indirect. It's a kind of... so they use that phrase, beloved of Australian political life. It's a kind of a dog whistle, really. It's suggesting that, as it were, be very careful about how what you say and do, because, in fact, we may restrict your ability, as it were, to, frankly, to earn a living. That, I think, is problematic. Now, is that what was intended here? Look, it's hard to know, but there is I think the fact that this debate is continuing, how many days after Brandis's letter, suggests that many people have read that letter and felt that there is a line that if not being crossed, it's in danger of being crossed, which suggests that if artists are going to take grants from a government organisation, and then in a sense they have to be sensitive to current government policy, that might extend far beyond the arts.
Now, the government's arts funding policy, or the government's arts funding body, the Australia Council, has been set up to fund the arts. The expression is at arm's length from government. Can we talk about that, the logic of that arrangement, this arm's length arrangement?
Look, so I think this really goes back to the great sort of idealistic founding documents around things like arts councils, and I think the best known of them is probably Maynard Keynes when he set up the arts councils, as indeed it's named in the UK in 1945. And he absolutely discussed in a very famous speech, in fact, made in the English Parliament in 1945 about this need, on the one hand, for arts bodies that's funded by government money and ultimately by the taxpayer to be accountable to Parliament, but also that we also had to understand that in doing so, that in a sense, as much as possible, the artist should nevertheless be free, as he said, free to critique or to be difficult or to be, indeed, as a word I've used, to be awkward about the society in which they're in. That, he saw, was a sort of premise, as it were, of civil society. So he said the task of an official body like the Arts Council, and this is the quote, is not to teach or censor, but to give courage, confidence, and opportunity. I think that's why in the Arts Council, the act that sets up the Arts Council, that it makes it quite clear that... the minister does not have the powers, as it were, to make give direction to the council about a particular case. However, that's where I think we're getting a problem here, because although I think Senator Brandis has been very careful to say he's not making wanting to direct him at a particular case, he's clearly building up behind that a set of potential policy directions that's going to make it very difficult for an organisation like the Sydney Biennial to deal with artists who want to draw attention to government sponsorship arrangements. I would then ask, as much as that can be difficult and awkward to think about, do we want a situation where artists cannot talk about or raise or question or indeed use their own patronage in a way to draw attention to those connections? I think that would be much more concerning than what we have at the moment, which, as I say, is obviously something which the current government feels has been some embarrassment to it.
The minister's letter is an extraordinary piece of drafting. It's a kind of model of how to do these things. And he states the law that indicates that he can't interfere in specific cases. And then he points to another section of the Act that says he has general powers, and it's under these powers that he's instructing the council how to behave. He's couched it very carefully, and as he puts it, it does sound as though he is totally legally entitled to do what he's done, doesn't it?
Look, probably legally he is, but I mean, aren't we talking about, or don't we really need to couch this debate in something broader than just simply in a sense of an ability to get what I suspect what he wants, which is a general culture out there where artists are much more sensitive, as it were, to not annoying corporate sponsors and thereby annoying government because of the behaviour of those corporate sponsors in relation to a government policy. It seems to me, I mean, I think in that letter is he says that the policy should consider whether all future funding agreements should contain a clause that stipulate that it is a condition of Arts Council funding that an applicant does not unreasonably refuse private sector funding. Okay, what's a reasonable refutation of private sector funding? What is actually reasonable here? Now, again, without entering into debate about the manners, peculiarities of the current government policy in Manus Island, is it unreasonable for an artist to question a corporation's involvement in that particular policy? Or indeed, what other policy? What if we take a company that deals with, say, cigarettes or tobacco? Is this again saying that artists should at no circumstance question the relationship between a corporate sponsor and an arts organisation?
It's saying they shouldn't question the relationship between a corporation and an arts event if they also expect to receive Australia Council money. That's his point, isn't it?
Well, and that's, I think, the nub of this, because that, I think, really does misunderstand the role of a body like the Arts Council. I, of course, I'm talking to you from a university, and it seems to me that a university is a precisely parallel example. The government, if you like, the state, funds universities at arm's length, as much as, perhaps not as much as we'd like, but nevertheless does so because, if it's like, it's a condition of civil society that we have these spaces, as it were, that enable free debate, that there is not an expectation that I, given, even though that my wages eventually comes from the Australian taxpayer, have to teach and think and deliver a curriculum based on current government policy. So I think there's been a confusion here about that. I think it's ironic, and I pointed that out in the article I wrote about this, it's sort of ironic that Brandis chose to do that at the same time that he's making, a very principled defence. I mean, we can disagree with it, but I think we shouldn't underestimate that. I think he is genuinely arguing from principle about his desire to repeal Section 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act on the basis that there are just the government, it's not the purpose of government, as it were, to try and dictate how we should think.
This is Books and Arts Daily on RN, and we're talking to Peter Tregear, who is Professor of Music. He's the head of the School of Music at the Australian National University, and we're discussing the issues that have been raised in the aftermath to the boycott of the Sydney Biennale and the withdrawal of Transfield Holdings from that event, and the subsequent letter that's been sent by Minister Brandis to the Australia Council, telling it that it will draw up guidelines to prevent the recurrence of all of this? I mean, you touched on the issue of ministerial responsibility, and then there is a counter to all this that says the Westminster system turns on this notion of ministerial responsibility. The minister must be answerable for the way in which taxpayers' money is spent, and he can't be answerable if he's not making the decisions.
Yes, although, again, what's the extent of that accountability? I mean, I'll just take an analogy. It might just be a little bit less controversial at the moment, but is a minister therefore accountable for every engagement that an academic at a university makes in the political sphere? No. A minister is certainly accountable, as it were, to the administrative and other accountability structures that are put around a university in the way that makes sure that we spend our money in an appropriate manner. And indeed, you know, again, I go back to Keynes. I know that he said the same thing. He said that an arts council, of course, will be independent and constitution, free from red tape, but because it is financed by the Treasury, it needs to be ultimately responsible to Parliament. I don't think anyone is actually disagreeing with that. I think it's the extent and nature of that accountability. Is it, in fact, an accountability around, as it were, political acts? And that's where I think I have a problem. And I say so, and I have it is a philosophical problem with this. It's one could have an argument about this without beginning to enter into debate around current government policy,
yeah,
around asylum seekers.
I mean, in music history, there are lots of examples, aren't there, of state controls shaping the way in which music was actually composed.
Absolutely. And in fact, in that sense, we start to head into the very dubious company, particularly in the 20th century. And there's another irony of this, of course, is that certainly in the 1960s and 70s, it was a deliberate policy, particularly of all organisations, the CIA, to fund arts organisations in the West precisely to be open, free, difficult, avant-garde, and so on, as a form of cultural propaganda against what they saw was precisely the opposite, a state-controlled art coming out of the East. And indeed, we still had some legacies of that very policy in this country. And Quadrant magazine, of course, was one magazine that was set up and funded by the Congress for Cultural Freedom. Jackson Pollock, another artist who was encouraged to do his abstract expressionism, in fact, had commissions through that organisation. And indeed, in music, I can think of composers like Pierre Boulez, Stockhausen, and so on, who were absolutely encouraged by the state to be free, as it were. I think, concerning that we might be slightly drifting back in another way. Now, there may be listeners out there and say, oh, big deal. I mean, what does it really, really matter? I mean, I think it's important that we recognise that, you know, to keep the sort of, as it were, a broader picture on this, that the price of liberty that's attributed to Thomas Jefferson, I think, incorrectly, but the price of liberty is indeed eternal vigilance, that we need to be concerned when we see this slippage between, as it were, the notion of what of these institutions in civil society and their distance from government per se, and the obvious desire in the cut and thrust of political debate, whether it's a government on either side of the current political spectrum, their desire, as it were, to control those organisations, and we need to resist it.
Peter Treguier, thank you for joining us this morning.
It's been a pleasure.
Professor Peter Treguier, he's the head of the School of Music at the ANU, and we've been talking about why the Australia Council, in his view, should keep a firm arm's length position from the government. And if you'd like to join this discussion, you can head to our website. You can click on today's story. I'd love to see your comments. There's so much to talk about here, isn't there? This is Books and Arts Daily on RN. I'm Michael Cathcart.